Our sermon passage is from Mark 2, Mark chapter 2. We're actually going to be reading Mark chapter 2 and into chapter 3, starting in verse 23. Hear the word of the Lord. One Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields. And as they made their way, the disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest, and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.' Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, 'Come here.' And he said to them, 'Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?' But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, 'Stretch out your hand.' He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him." May the Lord add his blessing to the reading of his word. Dr. Fred Craddock tells of a story about when he was driving through Etowah, Tennessee. And he says this, "The sign said city limit 30 miles an hour. So I came down to 30. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I know about those constables sitting around wanting something to do. I was under 30, and here he comes and pulls me over. I said, 'Officer, I was not going 30 miles an hour.' He said, 'I know, but do you see that other little sign down there? School zone, 15 miles an hour.' I said, 'Officer, it's 2 o'clock in the morning.' He said, 'Does it say, except for 2 o'clock in the morning?' Well, no. It says something about you on how you take this story. Some of you might think that the officer was right and just in citing Dr. Craddock. And some of you might think that the officer was being absurd in citing Dr. Craddock. Well, which is it? Well, in today's passage in Mark chapter 2, 23 through 3, verse 6, we get a look at what God thinks about going overboard with rules. And there's a lesson here that is particularly important to Christians. For there is a danger of getting too caught up in the rules. This can develop to the point of elevating rules to such a rigid status that there is no room for love. Love for God or love for our neighbor. The rule becomes the focus rather than the intent behind the rule. And let's look at a group that went way overboard on the rules, and after that we'll see how Jesus himself viewed the rules. So verse 23 and 24 again. "One Sabbath he was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, 'Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?'" So, what was the Pharisees' perspective regarding the rules and how they saw the disciples' action upon that Sabbath day? Well, the Mosaic Law in Exodus 34:21 commanded, in harmony with the fourth commandment, 6 days you shall labor, but in the seventh day you shall rest. Even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest." So what is the natural way to understand this command? Yes, don't go work in your fields on the Sabbath. Take a day off and rest. So the Pharisees, when they saw the disciples picking grain as they walked along, understood the disciples' action as harvesting. It was a violation to them of the command to rest. Well, to us, that may seem a little absurd. It could be that we see it that way. Because there's a big difference between going into the fields with your sickle and harvesting and then just picking some grains as you walk along to snack on as you walk through the fields. But that was the way the Pharisees were. They interpreted the law very narrowly. And as Jesus demonstrates, they interpreted it too narrowly. To violate the Sabbath was an offense that was punishable by death, as put forth in Exodus 31, verses 14 and 15. But according to the laws of the scribes, the offender had to be warned first, at the first offense, before they could kill him. And therefore, the Pharisees likely considered this particular incident as a warning to Jesus, since he was considered responsible for his disciples' actions. Well, there was a second Sabbath incident. Chapter 3, verse 2. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. The Pharisees had given Jesus warning, and now they were looking to get him. So when Jesus did this miracle upon the Sabbath, the Pharisees were ready to pounce, and they pounced. And look what they did as a result of the healing of this man. In verse 6, the Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. How to destroy him. Okay, Jesus had miraculously healed a man, but the Pharisees were so hard of heart that they could only think that, he broke one of the rules. And they interpreted his healing as work. And he broke a rule. Because he broke that rule, he's got to pay. Indeed, he must be killed. And you know, there is a danger in interpreting the law too narrowly. It goes hand in hand with adding to God's commandments by making more restrictive rules. And what can happen there is that you can actually go counter to the intent of God's command when this happens. And that is a fearful place to be. See how the Pharisees decided how to plot to kill God because God violated one of their rules? What hubris to add your own rule to a command of God and then to give it the authority of God's law. Now, Dr. Craddock, he tells of a woman he used to have as a neighbor. And in conversations with her, he says this: "I don't know why I got sucked into it. She'd do it to me every time. She would read the paper to see what was on at the theater in that little town. She'd say, 'I noticed such and such a movie is on. Have you seen it?' And sometimes I'd say yes, and then I'd say, 'Have you seen it?' And she'd said, 'No, I don't think Christians should go to the movies.'" What a subtle evil that this illustrates. I mean, this woman, she comes up with a rule, and then she applied that rule to all Christians. And then she sat smugly in her self-righteous judgment on those who did not go by her rule. And we have to be very, very careful when we add to God's law. I mean, there is a place for it when you have a particular struggle with sin, such as adultery or lust. And it's okay to put steps in place to keep you from sin in a particular struggle. And I know of a guy who anytime he would go on a business trip that he would have the TV removed from his hotel room. And that was his rule. With no TV in his room, He didn't have to worry about succumbing to the temptation of watching certain adult movies while he was alone in his room. But we make a mistake when we try to make a rule like that a rule for every Christian. If we did, we might end up condemning one another for being adulterers when all we did was watch football in our hotel room by ourselves. We can hear the gossip. We saw so-and-so come out of his hotel room when we were walking by and we noticed his TV was in there. He's an adulterer. We must be careful when adding to God's law. So what does Jesus teach us in his comments to the Pharisees' problem? Look at verses 25 and 26 there. And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him." Now the incident to which Jesus refers, Robin read it for us this morning from 1 Samuel. Chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. And the consecrated bread, the shoe bread as it was called, as we see in Leviticus 24, verses 5 through 9, it was to be put in the presence of the Lord on every Sabbath. And the bread belonged to the priest. And once it was removed from the presence of the Lord, it was theirs to eat. Well, what was Jesus getting at by telling this particular story of David? Well, consider the actions of Ahimelech, the priest who gave David the shewbread. David, the anointed king of Israel, was on a mission from God, and his men were hungry. And the shewbread was the only food to be had. So what could Ahimelech do? Let the Lord's anointed and his men starve while there was bread available? No, he let them eat the shewbread. He let them eat it because they were hungry. And in doing so, he acted consistently with the intent behind the law. Well, how so? Well, neither David nor Ahimelech are condemned in the Scriptures because of this incident. David was taking care of himself and his men's need. And Ahimelech was showing his love to them by providing for their need. The love for one's neighbor that C.S. Lewis has called charity. Now, where is the wrong in this? Where's the wrong in this? Well, nowhere. Now, someone who's hung up on the rules might say, "Sorry, but I guess you'll have to starve. This bread needs to sit on this table here before the Lord until I eat it, and that's the rule. I'm sure you understand." Hence Jesus' point. The Sabbath was a gift from God to man, to have a time to rest from his labors. It was to be kept holy, but it was not a burden to be carried. And the disciples picking the grain as they walked along was not wrong. And that's Jesus' point. Now, if they had taken a sickle into the field and began harvesting the grain as work, well, then that would have been wrong for very obvious reasons. But that is not what they were doing. They were not working. They were just meeting their need at the time, their hunger, by picking enough by hand to satisfy their need as they walked along. And then Jesus said something further. Take a look at verse 27. And he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." Now, why did God give us a day of rest? Well, it was to take care of us. It was to take care of us. It was a gift from Him. A time to enjoy the Lord. A time to enjoy the fruit of our labor. And this day of rest is an expression of God's love towards man. And Jesus was consistent with that love by God when he allowed the disciples to meet their need. And he was acting consistently with the law. And does it make any sense? I mean, think about this. Does it make any sense to make a day of rest and enjoyment and then force a person to starve on that day? And notice in verse 28 there, the very explicit statement of deity where Jesus, the Son of Man, is called Lord. Now let's look at Mark's next account here of Jesus' action on the Sabbath. Chapter 3, verses 1 and 2 sets up the situation. Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. Now, Jesus knew men's hearts, and he knew how the Pharisees were looking to catch him doing something wrong on the Sabbath. He knew this. Jesus wasn't naive. He knew what was going on. And so, once again, we saw a few passages back, he set up the Pharisees before. So once again, he set them up. And figuratively, it was like Jesus was poking the Pharisees in the chest, trying to get his point across to them. And look at verses 3 through 5 there. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, or to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. Notice that Jesus didn't ask the Pharisees whether it was lawful to work on the Sabbath. If he had done that, the Pharisees would have shouted him down. No, he asked whether it was lawful to do good or to do evil. And likely they were silent at this question. And it doesn't say they answered, and likely they were silent, because they certainly wasn't going to say that it was good to do evil, even though they had evil in their hearts at that very time. And if they said good, then they would have been saying that it was perfectly okay for Jesus to heal that withered hand. It was the Pharisees' rules that forbid healing on the Sabbath. This with the exception that a life was in danger. But a withered hand? No, they saw that work as being unnecessary on the Sabbath and therefore unlawful. It could wait a day. So Jesus was grieved that these men's heart was so hard and that they were so hateful to hold a rule as a priority over the alleviation of suffering. And he was furious with them. Yet Jesus, in compassion, demonstrated the power of God and healed this man's withered hand with a word. And you would think that such a feat would be a sign to the Pharisees. But no, they were too hung up on their rules and their intent to bring harm to Jesus to notice. Foolish men. So what was the perspective on the law that the Pharisees rather missed? Well, Jesus summed up the law in Mark 12, verses 29 through 31. He said, "There are no greater commandments than these. The first is, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all your mind, and all of your strength. And second, you shall love your neighbor as yourselves." And these two laws sum up all the law and the prophets. Hence, God's moral law, which is explicit, we see it in the Ten Commandments, when it's viewed with these, the big two, if you want to call them that, the big two commandments that Jesus gave, that basically that sum up the law, when viewed with those in mind, God's moral law, we see that God's laws are there for our benefit and our good. And love permeates the law. Think of that. Love permeates every command of the Lord. Every command. They are not strictures that are meant to bind us. And in these two accounts in Jesus' actions, well, he gives us a good way to understand God's law. We see that Jesus never denied it. I mean, it was his law after law, after all. And as Lord, he understood it with intent. It was given, and he acted accordingly. Of course, Jesus knew how to act according to the law. Think of that. He was the lawgiver. It was his. And God said in the fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And don't work on the Sabbath. And Jesus clarified this by saying, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The law was an action of love towards man. And man acting in love towards his fellow man is consistent with that love. And from this, we can derive an application that's in the form of an ethical principle. And God's law, we see, is it is not violated when you love your neighbor as yourself. Indeed, that is God's law. Hence, considering Jesus' handling of the commandment in this passage today, we derive the principle. If your actions are hateful to your neighbor for the sake of keeping God's law, then you've violated his law. Do you see that? If your actions are hateful to your neighbor for the sake of keeping God's law, then you have violated his law. Any action we do, any action, now these principles apply. And while we are not to be unloving of our neighbor, either through violation or a failure to help them, we are certainly not to use the commandment as an excuse for such behavior. And Jesus, of course, he's very clear on this in his teaching of the law. We must understand God's law according to God's intention. In our passage today, Jesus demonstrates how we are to understand the law. We must be very careful, extremely so, when we add our own rules to his law. And our understanding of his law must be according to his intention. And because Jesus demonstrated God's love in relation to his law, Christians must live consistently with that love.